Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Economics and the Spiritual Path, hosted by David Axelrod with guidance from Dax. Each show expands on the language, ideas, and insights from economic thought that can empower and enlighten the journey through your inner environment toward healing, creativity, and spiritual expression.
Welcome tonight, everyone. In case you'd like to call in, the number is 646-564-9714. Again, that's 646-564-9714. Tonight, we're going to talk about mindfulness in economics, as well as the law of distraction. Yes, you heard that correctly. It's the law of distraction, not the law of attraction. So this will be our third week. And just to give a quick review of what we talked about the first couple of weeks, discussed the relationship between behavior and experience and economics, recognizing that all our behavior and how we choose to experience comes out of the decisions and choices we make. And at the core of economics is decision-making and making choices. We talked a little bit about the difference between internal and external environments, so external environments being that which is around us, and internal environments, that which is within us, or in particular, that which defines and is the essential spirit and religious beliefs, convictions, and such of the decision maker. We talked a little bit about coulda, shoulda, woulda, and the difference, distinctions between what's feasible and what's acceptable, what's desirable and what's inspirable. And then in the second week, we talked about the realms of experience, which was physical, emotional, rational, and spiritual, and each was related with a different element of consciousness. So physical dealt with senses, and emotional dealt with feelings, rational dealt with thoughts, and the spiritual dealt with intuitions. And then we also discussed the relationship of time and choice, that the physical dealt with reflexive choice, that which is immediate. Before you have even time to think about it, even before you have time to feel what's going on, you've already acted. So that's choice at the immediate or physical level. Then there is the immediate, where if it's very short run, we don't have time to reflect upon it. That would be emotional decision making. If you have enough time to reflect upon it, that's going to be the realm of rational decision making. And that which seems to be beyond time, the realm of the universal or the eternal. So with that as a reminder of where we've been, let's start talking about mindfulness and economics. So one way of understanding this is that at the core of economics is about the use of resources. We tend to like efficient uses of resources. And, a long time ago, we looked at that as physical resources, the land, labor, maybe the equipment that we had. But over the years, it's become more and more subtle and a wider variety of sense of resources that we have. So over the years, we've come to realize that things like education and work experience are also resources that we count upon. The capacity to be a risk taker, for example. Now, how does this relate to mindfulness? At the core of mindfulness is going to be attention and consciousness. So one way of understanding it is that from an economic perspective, attention is a resource that we have. And it is not an infinite resource. When we look at the world around us, when we try to pay attention to different things, what we do find is that in any particular moment, if we want to pay more attention to one thing, we typically have to give away attention from something else. This is actually very similar to the uncertainty principle in physics, where if you want to be more certain about one thing, you typically have to be less certain about another aspect of the physical world. So with this in mind, mindfulness then is twofold. One is the practice of being able to choose what you're going to pay attention to, what you choose to focus on. And this is very important, not just from a spiritual standpoint, but, even from very practical, everyday things. Certainly, one of the things we're dealing with in our lives today is just a flood of information from all sorts of sources, but certainly the news how news is showing up from different venues, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and those aren't just single sources. There are millions of sources within each of those outlets. So we very much do have to decide and choose where we place our attention. That's one aspect of mindfulness, the recognition that in any particular moment, we do not have an infinite amount of attention. So where do we place it? Another aspect of mindfulness, though, is that we can learn and train ourselves to be more effective with our attention and our mind. So whereas maybe when we were younger, we could get distracted easily by shiny things or just the novelty of something new in life, as we go through the paths of life and learn how the world works, we figure out what are the more important things to pay attention to. And by doing that, we create priorities of what to be mindful of. So when dealing with everyday issues, it becomes very important that we can check in with ourselves and say, is this what I want to be focusing on? So one way that can show up is if someone does something that annoys you, might kind of get upset And you can either focus on the fact that you're upset and sort of try to get all the juice out of being upset. But that's going to drive your decision-making from a place of upset. And that may not be beneficial in the long run. Certainly in the moment when you're upset about something, if you're angry, you kind of want to express it. But depending on your situation, there may be better and not so better ways of expressing your anger or your upset. So in terms of mindfulness and economics then, before we can even express ourselves as willful beings that have power in the world, it is incumbent upon us to make sure that that which is guiding our power in the world is what we want to be guiding our power. So if you're thinking about long-term plans, you know, for example, if you're thinking about buying a house, you know, something that's going to last for decades, it's really useful to be able to have your decision-making be guided by the part of you that's going to be around for decades. So if you're 30 years old now, it's useful to be able to imagine, okay, well, when I'm 60, is this something that I'm going to want? Where am I going to be then? And that doesn't mean you're going to know things perfectly, but you can have, you know, relative sense. There are tendencies in life that it's useful not to ignore. At other times, of course, let's say if you're, you know, at a party or you're at some kind of event, you know, maybe a concert, maybe it's a art retreat, something like that. In that situation, invoking the part of the mind that can make practical decisions about, you know, how to spend money 30 years into the future, that may not be the optimal guide for you at the moment. So if you want to get the most out of that moment, you might come from a more sensory or feeling perspective. So sort of letting the short-term moment or the instantaneous moment guide your decision-making. So that's a useful distinction to be able to make. One of the things that we may hear from people that are trying to, you know, support our spirit, trying to encourage us to play bigger in the world, at least in a moment, they might talk about, you know, being in the moment or living in the moment. And that can often be very useful and sound advice. At a minimum, sometimes you have to be completely in the moment just to be aware of where are you emotionally. You know, is this who you want to be? Is this how you want to express yourself? But it begs a question that sometimes is ignored, which is, even if you choose to be in the moment, how wide is that moment? How big is that moment? Is it a fraction of a second? Is it a minute? Is it an hour, a day, years, a lifetime, multiple generations? So even that way of looking at the world still leaves open what is your focus? How narrow is your focus? And that, again, is where mindfulness comes into play. Raise an important question, which is, how is it that once we've chosen how to look at the world, that we stop looking at the world that way, right? So, you know, we may have a practice that we allow ourselves to, you know, maybe meditate or focus or whatever we do to get ourselves back in the moment. And then in the process of life, of doing things and having things occur around us, eventually we move out of that. So what is guiding that? Well, this is where the law of distraction becomes useful to discuss. So what is the law of distraction? Well, first of all, it is not the law of attraction. And in general, the law of attraction is understood as, you know, that which you pay attention to is that which you get more of. So the law of attraction is not that. What the law of distraction is the recognition that we don't do just one thing in life. We're constantly multitasking. And what does that mean? Well, at the most fundamental level, at the physical level, there's all sorts of processes that are going on inside of our bodies. We're breathing, we're digesting, blood is, circulating through our system. Our organs are all doing various things. Our muscles are tightening, they're relaxing, the immune system is working. So if we conceive ourselves even as simple as just our physical body, although I'm not going to suggest that's all we are, but if we were to identify ourselves with our physical body, we're doing so much simultaneously. That's a lot of multitasking. So given that there is a limited capacity for paying attention to things in a particular moment, it should not be surprising then that if we try to focus on one thing, that leaves us ignoring other things. But that doesn't mean those things aren't relevant or things that we have to deal with. So how does this play out? Well, when we've got multiple things to do and we're focusing on one thing, a pattern that you might want to convey for yourself is notice how as you're getting close to accomplishing one particular task, that if you don't make the conscious effort to stay focused and follow through until its completion, as you're getting closer to being done with the task, your mind will start thinking about all the other things that you have to do as well. It's not surprising. One way of understanding it is that the benefit that you get from focusing on the task is dependent on how much of that task is already done. So if you've hardly started it at all, then paying a little bit of attention of it, paying attention to it, can be very, very beneficial because you'll actually get something done, whereas you haven't gotten anything done yet. On the other hand, once you're getting close to being done, your senses and your feelings may be getting to the point of, okay, I've kind of done enough of this, or, well, I'm almost done with this. What else do I have to consider? And so this is where the law of distraction comes in. The law of distraction states that the closer that you get to completing a task, the more inclined you are to want to start paying attention to other things. Hence, the closer you are to completing something, the easier it is to be distracted. And by recognizing this law of distraction, and that is something that we have to deal with, it makes it easier to remind oneself that as you're about to finish a task, to kind of put on the extra gear on and spend a little bit more of your attention energies, your mindfulness, on just finishing the task at hand. If you're almost done with the task, just finish it. This is where it becomes useful to have a practice of mindfulness on a regular basis, not just because there's a lot that you can learn while you're doing your manifestation, your mindfulness exercises, but by practicing it, it will be easier to to follow through with the will and the strength to overcome the law of distraction. So let's take a short break, and we'll be back in a little bit.
International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more. All available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio. So go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
We return to Economics and the Spiritual Path, hosted by David Axelrod.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Again, the call-in number for those who would like to talk or ask questions or whatever is 646-564-9714. That's 646-564-9714. So, every once in a while, people will ask me when I start talking about the relationships between economic thinking and spirituality. How is it that this came together for me? And in particular with mindfulness and economics and the law of distraction, part of what informed me with this is my background as a musician, and especially as an improvisational musician. And, in order to play music well, one, you have to practice. You learn your scales and you learn chord structures, you learn songs, but you also have to practice with other people and get a sense of not only how to hear them, but also how they hear you. And so at that point, that helps to increase the awareness of how is it that you're paying attention to each other. And my main instrument is electric bass, and that, as a bassist, I tend to be more in the background when I'm performing. But it's a little bit different with improvisational, especially with jazz, where there's a lot of spontaneity. And so part of it is listening to the guitarist or violin player or percussionist. To hear cues, when they're basically saying, okay, I'm about to go off on a solo, or when you're about to say, okay, I'm about to get done. And one of the things that the way that shows up is, for example, if they repeat a riff over and over again, that's a way of allowing the other musicians to not only sync up with them, but it also is the invite for someone else to now take the lead. So in the practice of playing improvisational music, and it doesn't have to be music, anything where there's an improvisational element is very useful at this. That really asks us to pay close attention and to be very mindful of what we're going on and what we're doing. And it can be a very thrilling experience, a very absorbing experience. Now, with my background in economics, you know, part of me, well, you know, obviously we'll just enjoy the experience, but part of me, I find, is being aware of what's going on at that time. So when you're really practiced at something, it allows your body to do what you want it to do, right? Because you're so practiced, it's almost like it's hardwired. You don't need to have as much attention on what you're doing and more attention on the experience of what's going on. And that's one of the reasons why we do practice what we do and why it is important to practice. Any kind of performance. You know, again, if it's music or dancing or theater or sport or lecturing, it's very useful to have already practiced, if not the whole thing, at least the components of it, so that you can tell your body to do something, or you can trust your body will do what you want it to do at the moment, but be able to be more focused on what's going on with the environment. And this gets back to what we're talking about before, that part of developing mindfulness, especially around issues in economics, is to be able to practice economic thinking or practice economic consciousness at times when it's not the most crucial, right? So, like many things in life, you want to be able to practice in a safe environment so that when it comes time to do what you need to do, you're already practiced. You don't want to necessarily learn under the line of fire, so to speak. So one of the things that I recommend for people as they're dealing with their economic and financial issues, they don't wait to the last moment to deal with handling bills or looking at their checking account or looking at their finances. For some people like myself, it's actually kind of fun and relaxing to play with numbers. I'm a little unusual that way. For most people, though, working with numbers is not particularly fun. It's a challenge. It's an effort, and it's using a part of their mind, a part of their brain at times that is not well practiced. So in the same way that most of us have a dominant hand, you know, whether it's your right hand or the left hand, we tend to do a lot of things with our dominant hand. The challenge, though, is that the weaker hand almost never gets any practice, never gets used. And so we have a situation where we need to rely on the weaker hand, it's out of practice. And that can leave us feeling very vulnerable. So it's one thing to, have to rely on that which is not your strong point. It's another to feel very vulnerable because you're not even sure you know how to use it. So what does that mean? I recommend for people that they regularly, balance their checkbook if they still use a checkbook, that when they get bills in, when they get financial statements in, that they don't wait, they don't put it in a pile of, to do, at some point in the future. The ideal thing would be to set up a specific time when you will do it, and also to do it well ahead of time. So here's the reasoning behind that. you get a bill or you get a financial statement, and typically with bills you have a due date that you have to get the thing paid for. For some people, you know, they'll wait till the last moment to, you know, consider the bill, considering how they're going to pay for it, and then they're all in a rush. Now, given what we said before about time and choice, the shorter the period of time you have to make a decision or to choose something, the less it's going to come from the spiritual and rational realm, and the more it's going to be guided by your emotion or your physical state at the moment. You know, generally paying a bill is not as immediate as something physical, right? Like if you were on a ladder and you slip, you know, it's very useful if you've already been trained to know how to handle that. When you're paying bills, it's typically not that immediate. But if you have too short a period of time, you can start making decisions from emotional states. And that's where we get into trouble. Why? Well, if you've got a bill that you need to pay and you're feeling time pressured, you might get too upset emotionally. You might, you know, instead of just looking at it as, oh, bill to pay, okay, what do I need to do? You might exaggerate those feelings into the world, you know, feeling that the world is against you, that the economic system is rigged against you, you know, that there's some kind of a conspiracy. And if that's being driven by your emotional state of just being upset or being stressed, then one, that doesn't necessarily help you pay your bill. That's one thing. And two, it doesn't help you have clarity about how your choices can impact handling what you have to deal with in the moment, but also being aware of how your choices now affect, you know, what you have to choose from in the future. So it's important then that when you get a financial statement in or when you get a bill in, instead of waiting to the last moment, make sure you take a look at it, you know, at least a few days ahead of time, preferably at least a week, so that when you look at it, if it looks like you're going to have difficulty paying your bill, okay, you're giving yourself a week to figure out what's going on, or a couple of weeks to figure out what's coming on. If you wait to the last moment, then you put yourself in crisis mode. And when you put yourself in crisis mode, then you have to deal with how your body's in crisis, how it's stressed, how that distracts you. And that becomes a very inefficient use of your mind and your attention. So one of the best habits that you can get into that by itself may lead you to make better decisions, which will help your economic state and your financial state, is don't wait to the last moment to handle bills. Don't put off taking a look at your financial statement. Know where you are than not. Now, once you've taken a look at it, once you've kind of figured out what you might need to do, you know, if you're upset about it, but you've already kind of got your plan for how to handle things, you know, then if you want to go and, you know, do something that's either, you know, either a distraction or something that will help, you know, lift your mood, you know, going out for a walk or going out dancing or something like that, that's good. If those things are enjoyable in life, you want to do the things that you enjoy in life, and that'll help relieve some stress. But the key is to handle things first make sure that you're not creating problems for yourself that you don't need to, and then do the things that may help you de-stress. So the insight here is this: is if you tell yourself that I can't handle this, it's too much stress, ask yourself, is that true? Or is it it's just something you don't want to deal with? Sometimes we have to stretch ourselves, and we might be feeling like this is a little too much, but if it's just like the basic things in life, like paying a bill, you don't want to ending up using a lot of attention in your mind just dealing with the basics of life. They're already challenging enough as they are. And once you get in the habit of being aware of where your financial statements are, you get in the habit of figuring out how you're going to pay bills well ahead of time, what you will find is that you have freed up your mind to do other things that can be more productive, and other things that will lead not only to enjoying life more, but also can help reduce the cost of life itself. So, for example, if you get in the habit of figuring out how to not pay bills late, then you're not spending as much money on fees and fines for paying things late. If you don't wait to the last moment or until you're finding out that you've got all sorts of financial problems before you start looking at where you are financially, you can make course corrections. So that's one of the ways that mindfulness and economics comes into play there. Okay, so let's take another short break, and let's see what we shall listen to today. How about this?
Lord Donald's wife stepped into the church, the gospel for to hear. And when the meeting it was done, she cast her eyes about. That's where she spied a little Matty Groves walking in the crowd. Come home with me, little Matty Groves, come home with me tonight. Come home with me, little Matty Groves, and sleep with me till light. Oh, I can't come home, I won't come home and sleep with you tonight. By the rings on your fingers I can see you are Lord Donald's wife. What if I am Lord Donald's wife? Lord Donald's not at home. He is out in the far gone fields bringing the yearlings home. Said, he swore Lord Donald he would know before the sun would set. And in his hurry to carry the news, he bent his breast and ran. And when he came to the broad mill stream, he took off his shoes and swam. When he awoke, Lord Donald, he was standing at his feet, saying, "How do you like my feather bed? How do you like my sheets? How do you like my lady who lies in your arms asleep? Well, I like your feather bed. Well, I like your sheets. But better I like your lady gay who lies in my arms asleep. Well, get up, Lord Donald cried, get up as quick as you can. It'll never be said in fair England that I slew a naked man. Oh, I can't get up, I won't get up, I can't get up for my life. For you have two long beaten swords and I not a pocket knife. Well, it's true I have two beaten swords and they cost me deep in the purse. But you shall have the better of them and I will have the worse. And you will strike the very first blow and strike it like a man. And I will strike the very next blow, and I'll kill you if I can." Very first blow and he hurt Lord Donald sore. Lord Donald struck the very next blow and Matty struck no more. And then Lord Donald took his wife and sat her on his knee, saying, "Who do you like the best of us, Matty Groves or me?" And then up spoke his own dear wife, never heard to speak so free, "I'd rather a kiss from dead Matty's lips than you or your finery." He did bawl. He struck his wife right through the heart and he pinned her against the wall. A grave, Lord Donald cried to put these lovers in. But bury my lady at the top, for she was of noble kin."
International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
Well, welcome back again. That was Mattie Groves, that song, and definitely a reminder of where life goes and the choices you have to make and what happens when you make them at the most emotional states. So, so again, today we've been talking about mindfulness and economics and the law of attraction. You can still call in. The number is 646-564-9714. That's 646-564-9714. So what are some concluding thoughts? So we have a certain amount of attention that we can spend on the world. And with any within any particular moment, we can be more focused on one thing, but typically the trade-off is that we are less focused on something else. So we can pay more attention to one thing, but in order to do that, we're giving away attention for something else. Now, that's within a particular moment. But depending on the choices that we make in our lives, we can expand our capacity for mindfulness. So the overall amount of attention that we can spend on the world, that can grow as we practice, as we take in the resources and the skills to expand that. But within a particular moment, when we're not in a position to grow that capacity, we face the trade-offs that we do. And that recognition is what drives the law of distraction. So that one of the things that I hope you'll walk away from with listening to this show is that as you're doing things in life, especially when you have important tasks, maybe things that are important for moving ahead with a career, or maybe you're taking courses and you have to finish a paper, or you have a project at work that needs to get done. The challenge there is to remind yourself to follow through and complete it, to avoid letting yourself getting distracted by other things that you do have to do but are not necessarily as immediate at that moment. And in following through and getting practice at this, it becomes easier to do. It becomes easier to stay focused on the task at hand until you've completed it. And with it, one, you become more confident in your ability to do that. And second, the people around you will learn that they can trust you to complete what you say that you're going to do. And as that occurs, there will be an increased trust with bigger and more important projects and things in your life. And that is part of how you become more effective in the world. And if there's anything about economics, it's not solely about money. It's not solely about finances. It's about being able to create the world and create the experiences that you want to live in and that you want to have. And even more deeply than that, in the realm of the holonomics, so a holistic economics, it also is about who you want to be. Who do you want to be when you're having to make these important choices? Who do you want to be in terms of what responsibilities do you take on in life? And the ability to take on more substantial, more compelling, more widely impacting decisions and choices comes from demonstrating to the world that you are the type of person that can make these choices and decisions. And people may not always agree with what it is that you want to do, But if you show up as you can make a decision, you can make that choice, and you can follow through, and you can complete, then you have communicated to the world that this is the role that you want in life. Okay, so with that as a closing thought, and we don't have any callers at this moment. I will bid you adieu, and in terms of economics and your spiritual path, remember to handle things before they become an issue, and then you'll have focus and time to do the things that are really more important to you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.